Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Huddle, live in Lenoxville on 88.9 CJMQ The Cube. I'm here with Stone Sousa and Ryan David. Guys, how's it going?
Great.
Not bad. It's a little bittersweet moment, though.
Yeah. It is bittersweet.
Last show for a while, so.
Sucks it's the last one. What a ride it's been.
Yeah, last show with all of you. I'll be back on the air in a couple weeks. I gotta take care of some business, but after that, Dylan will be joining me, and then we'll be on for the summer. But we do have another crazy show for you guys today. Two subjects, but two big ones. First, we're going to start by giving our 2018 NFL mock drafts. I can't wait to do this. The draft is in less than a week, approximately. And then, Ryan, this is your moment. We're going to be talking
time, baby.
LeBron James versus Michael Jordan. You struggled in last week's debate. I think you lost that one. So this year, shot to make up for it.
I don't know about all that, but I'm going to come in with some heat today, let me tell you.
All right, but let's talk about, in other news, Kawhi Leonard hasn't even been traveling with the Spurs right now. In my opinion, he won't be a Spurs next year.
I think they're going to trade him.
I hate this guy right now, man.
It's frustrating because I did like Kawhi.
I was a big Kawhi fan, and now he's just, to me, he's letting his not only his team but the fans down. It seems like a very cowardly thing to do for me.
And it's just so un-Spurs-like. Usually you don't see the Spurs, you know, in the news making headlines. Now you have this guy who's, you know, putting them out there like that. I think they're going to move him and, you know, get back to their ways.
Yeah, I mean, they need him.
And there's rumors that, you know, he wants to go back to L.A. And L.A.'s got a bunch of cap space. So you never know. The Lakers could be an option.
For sure. Wherever Kawhi goes, that's going to be interesting during the offseason. But now we have the NBA playoffs going on. And we've got some crazy series going on. First of all, the Cavs. Not at all what I expected.
You and me both. It's been a struggle. Like I sort of expected it to be a little bit of a dogfight because the Cavs did struggle with the Pacers all throughout the year. I mean, we lost the season series 3-1 to the Pacers this in the regular season, but I mean, hey, as long as we got the King, I have no doubt.
Yeah, it's just the bigs. Miles Turner is just killing you guys on the glass and everywhere else.
And there's a simple solution to that, right? Ty Lue, put Tristan Thompson in the game. I'm not a big fan of Tristan anymore. He's been struggling as of late, but just to have that big body down there protecting the rim, because we're getting eaten.
Yeah, yes, it's hands
on the
down.
Boards, yeah. Oladipo drives to the rim with nobody there to protect it. So I think if you get Tristan Thompson down low, a nice big body standing in front of the rim, that could change a lot for the Cavs.
The only other problem I have is, what's up with Kevin Love? I heard he has a ligament injury in his thumb, and that's huge.
Huge.
Yeah, but it's on his non-shooting hand, thank God. Okay. So that'll be a little bit less significant.
He's going to be playing game 3.
Exactly,
apparently.
And he's expected to play.
Yeah. They need him. They need all the help they can get
100%.
Right now.
100%.
But, yeah, the fact that LeBron put up 46 on Wednesday night. And that they only won by 3 for me is not a good sign pick for the Cavs going to the finals.
And just Oladipo, what a coming out party it's been for him. You know, playing last year with Russell Westbrook didn't look anything like this at all. Now he's, cementing himself as a star in this league. So
I mean, we know LeBron's going to keep doing what LeBron does. We just need these role players to really get comfortable, relax a little bit, and start hitting their shots.
Speaking of Russell Westbrook, not the series that I expected from him. I expected kind of a blowout with all those studs on one team. I thought it was finally going to come together during the playoffs. Not really.
It's only Paul George and everybody else, because right now that's the only thing saving Oklahoma City from being down 0-2. Because if Paul George didn't put up 36 in game one, they're losing that game.
But how about the kid? Donovan Mitchell. He is balling out.
Stud.
A superstar.
He was the first rookie since LeBron James to score 25 and get 10 rebounds in his first playoff game.
I mean, hats off to Utah, because their coach is putting him in the right situation. You know, they don't have a bunch of studs, like stars in their team. Rudy Gobert is maybe, a borderline all-star.
A bigger name, yeah.
Yeah, a bigger name, but, I mean, they don't have as many pieces as Oklahoma City, and they're still, putting up a very good fight.
It's been a fun series to watch so far. Yeah. There's a lot of exciting players.
And Oklahoma City needs to start playing better basketball. They can't just play this hero ball and, everybody takes their turn and then missing shots. Like 0-14 in the fourth quarter for the big three. That's unacceptable for those three guys.
That's awful.
Yeah, I love the fact that we have a 19-year-old stepping up and putting the team on his back and actually performing. Donovan Mitchell, I love this guy. Can't wait to see this guy in the future. Another interesting series, the Pelicans against the Trailblazers.
That's your team, Stone. Those Trailblazers.
Let's not
talk.
Let's skip this one, Zach. Let's let's move on from this one.
Man, those Trailblazers are stinking it up right now.
Damian Lillard is getting shut down. I mean, Jrue Holiday. Wow. I knew he was good. I didn't know he was this good.
Listen, year in and year out, Dame is complaining that he wants his respect. He's an All Star. He should be first team All NBA. Well, go out there and prove it.
This is the time you got to
show us something, Dame, because right now they are getting manhandled. And Anthony Davis hasn't even really been a big impact player.
Boogie Cousins
yet.
Is not even there.
Listen, they're in trouble, man. If you go 0-2 and you had home court advantage, so you lost two games at home, you're in trouble for the rest of this series.
I hate to say it, but if we don't win game three, we're going home.
Hey, yeah. If you don't win game three, you better bring out those brooms, baby. New Orleans coming for that sweep.
One team that I didn't expect to make much noise in the playoffs is Boston. Wow. And Boston, without their two stars, is actually doing pretty well. So that, for me, I was talking about how I was excited for Boston the next couple years with their stars back. They're actually doing a great job.
Yeah, and Ryan, remember I was mentioning to you, I think Boston can make a Philadelphia Eagles type of run. You know, maybe win the first series and, you know, maybe put up a fight in the second round. But, I mean, they're playing very good basketball. I mean, the Bucks right now is... The Bucks right now, I don't know what they're doing, because you have all these stars, or, you know, at least solid players on your team, and you can't beat a injury-depleted Celtics roster.
But the Celtics are the epitome of what you look for when building a team. They have depth.
Heart.
They have hustle. They have heart. They work as a team.
Good coaching.
They have great coaching. Brad Stevens is a great coach. And it just goes to, like, if you take LeBron James away from the Cavs, they're awful.
They're lottery.
They're probably one of the worst teams in the league. And just to if you lose Gordon Hayward and Kyrie, to me, it's just extremely impressive.
It's good drafting
how this team has come together.
Good drafting by Danny Ainge. Terry Rozier, he could start on every other team. Maybe teams without a point guard.
Ooh, Jason, what about the end of that game against the
Bucks? Oh, that was a crazy
Terry
ending.
Terry Rozier makes the clutch shot with 0.5 seconds left. And I thought it was done.
I thought it was
closed
over.
The screen. Yeah, I thought it was over.
Chris Middleton, wow.
What a shot.
And just Eric Bledsoe saying he doesn't know who Terry Rozier is. I'm sure you know who the guy who dropped
definitely.
You.
Exactly. Terry Rozier is that same dude that's been cooking you two games straight. You know exactly who he is.
But honestly, Giannis Antetokounmpo, I expected more, you know.
He doesn't have a jumper. No, there's no jump shot. So teams are not going to guard him on three-point line. They'd rather him shoot than, you know, have Chris Middleton or Malcolm Brogdon take a jump shot. Because when he comes, the farther back he is, the less chances of his shots going in. Sort of like Ben Simmons, you know, when Philadelphia gets close to the end, teams are not going to guard him. Because you know why? He can't shoot.
Exactly. But the only nice thing about that is Ben Simmons has shooters around him.
Yeah. Milwaukee does not. Maybe Chris Middleton's the only one.
Doesn't really have any shooters around him. So when you don't have that jumper and you don't have that threat, it's easy to just stand back there and wait for the guy to come drive the lane because you know it's coming. So
yeah,
they're struggling.
Let's talk about these 76ers. Ben Simmons.
Joel Embiid back tonight.
Yep.
They're an exciting young team, man. Like, we were talking about Donovan Mitchell stepping up. There's been so many rookies in these playoffs that have impressed me.
The future of the NBA is solid.
It's incredible. It's actually been really fun to
watch.
And
their pickups of Ilyasova and Bellinelli have been huge. I mean, those guys have come out and ball off the bench. So
they
it's
have.
Great to
That's
see
good
that.
Depth players. Yeah. I mean...
Covington's balling too. I mean, they got.
I'm a huge LeBron fan, huge Cavs fan, but I'm kind of rooting for the Eagles. Not the Eagles.
For, same city. Same city.
I don't want to hear about the Eagles
anymore. I'm still
so
excited about that Patriots loss. No, I'm rooting for the Sixers to make a run, not all the way, because I still have LeBron making it to the finals. But I'd love to see them play in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Me too. That would be a great series.
So this is our last show. So how do you feel? I've got to ask you about LeBron further in these playoffs. You know, we're talking about. Me right now, I'm doubting my pick for them making it to the finals just because the 76ers are looking so good and LeBron just has nothing around him. Nothing's going on.
And I have no doubt. I mean, it's kind of like, this is going to hurt to say a little bit, but it's kind of like counting Tom Brady out. You know, like no matter what happens around him, like year in and year out, Tom Brady goes out and does his thing. They get to the Super Bowl and whatever happens from there happens. And I think the same thing's going to happen with LeBron James. I mean, we all know he's a pass-first guy. He likes getting his teammates involved. But when they need him, we saw what he was capable of doing. He came out there and scored 16 straight points.
29 points in the first half.
It was ridiculous. Like, if he comes with that mentality, and I think he will because he knows he's going to have to throughout these playoffs, there's just nobody in the East, at least, that can stop LeBron James, my eyes.
I think he has to play like that because you've seen guys like Jeff Green, you know, Rodney Hood. Those guys can't buy a bucket right now.
And it's only a matter of time until these guys start hitting shots. I mean...
But until then, LeBron's got to do what he's got to do.
Exactly, but...
Which is everything.
Yeah, everything.
If we're looking at the positive side, it's two games in a row that we've held Indiana to under 100. Albeit we got blown out in the first game, don't get me wrong, our offense was even worse, but... From the Cavs' point of view, I think that's something to really be happy about. Because
And Ty Lue putting Jarrett Smith in the starting lineup, I think that was big. And if, you know, he puts Tristan Thompson, like you were saying, I think that could be a big boost as well.
Yeah, I mean, everybody needs to take a breath. It's a seven-game series. Whether we win in five or we win in seven, if you get to the next round, anything can happen.
All right, so let's move on to this mock draft.
Oh, baby.
So how we're going to do this, we're each going to say our top 10. We're only going to do top 10 because we want to debate on our picks.
32 is a little long.
32 is a little long, so... I'm going to start. Ryan, you're next, then Stone. And after that, we're going to discuss our top 10. So let me start. My 2018 mock draft. First time doing a mock draft. I feel pretty solid about this one. Number one overall pick, the Cleveland Browns, are going to go with Sam Darnold. It's this, for me, it's the, he has the highest floor, meaning that at his worst, I think he has the least bust potential. And I think Cleveland, they're not going to take a chance on anybody. They've whiffed so many times on quarterback. They've got to go with a solid pick, Sam Darnold. Number two, New York Giants, which, first of all, I wouldn't be surprised if New York trades down. But right now, if it's their pick, I think they got to go Josh Rosen. Because Eli Manning has maybe two years
maybe
left.
Maybe two.
Max. Yeah, like last year he was benched. Let's not forget that. He was benched. So I'm thinking Josh Rosen, hey, he even looks like Eli Manning. So I wouldn't be surprised if they take him. I think he'd be a good guy. He's a California kid. I think he's ready for a big city like New York. And then number three, the New York Jets. Broadway Baker is going to be a thing. I think the New York Jets are going to go for Baker Mayfield. And I think it's going to be great for them. There's finally going to be another legit quarterback in the AFC East. And I think that he's going to be a good fit. I don't think that he's going to be a Johnny Manziel type quarterback. I'm not saying he's going to go in there and be a Pro Bowler right away. But give him some time, and I think the Jets are going to be able to build something around him. And number four, the Browns have their second pick in the top five. They're going Bradley Chubb. Mm. And for me, I'm thinking if you want to start a rebuild, you got to get a quarterback and you got to get to the other team's quarterback. So now you have Myles Garrett, last year's first overall pick, and Bradley Chubb. They're going to get to the quarterback and it's going to be a dangerous one. So I'm really looking forward to the Browns if they do this. Number five, the Broncos. After number five, this is where it got kind of harder. These first four picks were pretty easy for me. But I think the Broncos, they lost Aqib Talib. I think they're going corner. I think they're going for Denzel Ward. They need that physical, hard-hitting, man-to-man corner. And I think Denzel Ward's going to be the guy for them. And then, Ryan, your Colts at number six.
What we got? Tell me what we got, Zach.
What's been the problem with the Colts the last years? Andrew Luck hasn't been healthy. We got to protect Andrew Luck. I think they're going for Quentin Nelson.
Love it. Can't be mad at that.
Almost unanimous, most safest pick in the draft. Everybody's been raving about Quentin Nelson. Talk about he's the best
Larry Allen lineman
since Joe Thomas. You know, like Joe Thomas was third overall. I think Quentin Nelson's going to go number six overall to the Colts. Buccaneers, they had the worst passing defense last year of the whole league. So I think they got to go get a safety. They're going to go get Minka Fitzpatrick.
Bama.
Interesting. Okay.
A Bama guy. Yep. I think this is going to be great for them. I love Minka Fitzpatrick. I watched one highlight. I watched two other ones. He's a great guy for Bama. He's a stud. Exactly. And he's ready for the league. Then Chicago Bears. I think they need to be able to put some pressure on other teams. I think they're going Marcus Davenport.
Wow.
Another guy who is a beast.
His stock has been rising lately, so I can see that.
A 6'7 dude who can run a 4.59. He's just a beast, and I think he's going to be great for the Chicago Bears. The Bears just signed they just signed a new receiver.
Yeah, Allen Robinson.
Allen Robinson, exactly.
Taylor Gabriel too, Trey Burton as well.
Exactly, yeah. So they've been, at first I would have thought receiver, but they've been stocking up on receivers in the free agency. So I think they're going to go Marcus Davenport. And number nine, this is a pick. I hope it happens because it'd be so exciting. The 49ers got to give a little something to Jimmy Garoppolo, and it's
gonna
be
going.
Saquon Barkley
at nine.
That would be crazy.
Is incredible.
A lot of people think I think he's gonna drop a bit.
I think he's gonna drop.
Top 10 is good, but at the end of the day, Saquon was averaging, and we talked about this, 21 carries a game. He's a home run guy, but he's not a workhorse. I think he's gonna be great for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo is gonna have someone in the backfield with him, and just think about everything Kyle Shanahan could do. Split him out to the wide out. Saquon could do everything. He's just a freak athlete. So Saquon with the 49ers, I think, is going to be a great fit.
And don't forget they added Jerick McKinnon too. So, and Jerick McKinnon is a great, you know,
nice
second option.
Exactly. So Saquon is going to the 49ers, in my opinion. Last one, we have the Raiders at number 10. I think they're going Derwin James.
Okay.
I think he fits that Raider attitude.
Looks
that
like a John Gruden
grimy
player.
Yep, exactly. I think he fits. He's going to be a Gruden grinder. He's going to be John Gruden's dude on the defense. And there is my top 10.
I like it. Honestly, I like
good.
It.
Very
we,
good.
We started off quite similarly, but we ended up in a different direction.
And just to add to this, we will be posting all three of our mock drafts on the Huddle page because we want to hear what you guys have to say about our mock drafts. If you agree, if you disagree, join the debate. join the huddle. That's what we're all about. So we're going to be posting these. Ryan, the floor is yours.
So Ryan's 2018 NFL mock draft.
Let's hear it. Here we go.
At number one overall, the Cleveland Browns. Zach, I can't disagree. I got Sam Darnold.
Sam Darnold.
Simply for the same reason Zach said, they have whiffed so many times on quarterbacks. It's time they finally take that safe pick. They're going to get their guy of the future. Hopefully for them it works out. I got them going Sam Darnold. Number two, New York Giants. I got him going Josh Rosen,
Josh Rosen, there you go.
Again, Eli Manning's only got some time left. I can see them taking Saquon, don't get me wrong, but this draft is just so deep in running backs that I'd rather take Josh Rosen at two and get another running back, maybe a Darius Geis or a Ronald Jones in the second round, as opposed to take Saquon and hope to find a quarterback in the later round.
Exactly, yeah. When are you going to get a number two overall pick?
Exactly. If they're going to get their future franchise quarterback, I think now's the time.
Because Giants should have never went 3-13 last season.
Exactly. This was unexpected.
Exactly, yeah. So they're just blessed to be in this position right now. Yeah.
Exactly. So I got them going quarterback at two. Number three, to the Jets, Broadway Baker. I'm with you still, Zach.
I like it.
If the Giants go out and get a quarterback, the Jets got to make a splash. To me, it's that simple. Even though they're not in the same division, the Giants and the Jets are rivals simply because they play in New York. They're fighting for fans. They're fighting for revenue. So,
hey, two top three quarterbacks coming in the same year in the same city. I like it.
That's the story. The hype is going to be crazy. I think Baker's arguably the best quarterback in the draft. So you need a quarterback. You trade it up to three. So we know they're going to take a quarterback. Why not take that guy who's got the chip on his shoulder, who's got everything to prove? Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be great for them.
Yep.
Number four. This is where we start going in different directions.
It's probably the most we've agreed on since we started the show.
Yeah, 100%. That's about as far as we're going.
All right.
At number four, Cleveland Browns' second pick, I got him taking Saquon.
Saquon?
They get their quarterback of the future for number one, and they still get the best player in the draft at number four. I think that's too hard for them to pass up. Saquon's going to be a generational talent at running back. If you pair him up with a rookie quarterback, I think that takes a heck of a lot of the pressure off the quarterback. So I got them going two offensive studs in the first in their first two picks. Number five, the Denver Broncos. And hear me out. I've been a big believer and a big sayer that in the top five, there will be four quarterbacks taken, and I'm sticking to it. We've talked Case Keenum over our time here at the huddle. He's not that guy.
He's not that guy.
He's not the quarterback of the future. And John Elway likes his quarterbacks. He's a quarterback himself, a Hall of Famer, and he's been very hyped on Josh Allen. He likes the kid. If there's a team that could maybe mold him into what he needs to be, I think Denver could do it. Maybe he sits a year or two behind Case Keenum and learns something, gets coached up, but I can see the Denver Broncos going quarterback at number five. Number six, my Colts. How sweet it is to trade back from 3-6 and still get our guy. I got us taking Bradley Chubb. We're switching back to a 4-3 defense. Thank the Lord. We can finally get some pieces, some studs. We're going to get a stud defensive piece here. We haven't had a pass rush since Dwight Freeney and Robert Mathis consistently. So I don't think there's any way we pass up on Bradley Chubb. He's big. He's strong. He's athletic. He's fast. He's probably the most all-around defensive prospect in the draft, I would say. Maybe even one of the most NFL-ready. I see the Colts going and getting their pass rusher of the future. Number seven. We had the same mindset, just a different player here, Zach. I had the Tampa Bay. They had a terrible pass defense last year. I also have them going safety, but I have them taking who I believe is the better safety in the draft in Derwin James. I think he brings just a different aspect to the game than Minka does. Minka's more of a I can put him anywhere type piece, where I think Derwin's going to be that guy in the backfield who you're scared to throw deep routes or over the middle because he's got that speed, he's got that physicality. He's strong. I think he's probably, maybe other than Saquon, the best athlete in this draft. So I think Tampa strengthens up that safety position and gets Derwin.
And let's not forget, Florida State is, close to Tampa. So, they've seen a bunch of him.
Exactly. He's a Florida boy. I think they're sticking with him, and I think he's going to he's one of my favorite players in this draft. I personally wouldn't be mad if the Colts happened to get Derwin in this draft. So, number eight. We were talking about how they got all these young pieces now. They have Mitch Trubisky, the Chicago Bears. They got Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, Taylor Gabriel. But you got to protect them. You got to give them time to throw that football. And I think the Chicago Bears would be ecstatic to have Quentin Nelson fall to them at number eight. So I got them taking, like you said, probably the safest pick in the draft.
And his O-line coach, Notre Dame, is now the O-line coach at Chicago. So
that I didn't know that. So that there you go. There's that connection, too. Kind of strengthens up my argument there. Number nine, the San Francisco 49ers. Yep. They tried to get their guy last year. It didn't work out. Reuben Foster's been getting into all kinds of trouble.
That's an understatement.
He's facing 11 years in jail because of all these domestic violence charges. It is sad. He's a young kid. He had a lot of potential, a lot of talent. But I think they go get a better version of him this year. I think they draft Roquan Smith. They replace Reuben Foster with maybe a better player.
A better character.
A better character, a better kid. So I think, to me, I think that's an easy pick for them. Again, if Saquon doesn't fall that far, but if Roquan is on the board for them at number nine, I think that's
a great pick. And then if Reuben Foster ever does get his stuff cleared up, you got two studs. Yeah.
That's true. That because you can play Roquan inside or outside, so I think that'll be a great piece for their young defense. And then at number 10, I think Oakland would have wanted Roquan Smith to sort of strengthen that linebacking group, but because he got taken at nine, I have them taking Tremaine Edmonds at 10.
Mm. Highest upside in the draft.
Exactly. Highest upside. He's a 19-year-old. He is massive. He's like 6'5", almost 260. Physically and athletically, he's being compared to Brian Urlacher. Mm. And if you're talking about a Gruden grinder, I think Tremaine Edmonds is going to be that guy. Yep. So there you go. There you have it. There's my top 10 picks in the mock.
Interesting.
For my mock draft. Yeah.
All right. Stone.
I'm excited to hear this. My mock draft.
I can't wait to hear your number one.
Number one. You already know who it is, Zach.
No way.
Josh Allen.
Okay.
And this is why it's Josh Allen. Last year, when John Dorsey was the GM for Kansas City, who did he trade up to get? A guy who could throw the ball far, Patrick Mahomes. Throws the ball like, 7 yards, just as far as Josh Allen? And he passed on Deshaun Watson, who went to the next pick. So, I mean, Deshaun Watson compares, you know, favorably to maybe Sam Darnold. But I think in Cleveland, with the weather and with the way that Josh Allen has played in a pro-style system, they're going to take Josh Allen number one. Number two, I think that the Saquon talk is all smoke, and they're going to draft Sam Darnold. I think the Giants, you know, you guys talk about Josh Rosen, but I think that Dave Gettleman loves Sam Darnold, and I think he'll fit perfectly in New York. Doesn't bring any, you know, baggage or anything. He's going to come in, do his job, and he's going to take over for Eli Manning in the future. Number three, we're all in agreement here. Broadway Baker. I think that's a thing. As soon as they said that, that was hands down. That's automatically what's going to happen. He has that New York mentality.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to go in there, change the culture, and he's going to make sure that the Jets get back to relevance. Might not make the playoffs, but at least they'll be competitive. Number four, me and you, Zach, we're on the same page here. Bradley Chubb.
There you go.
I think you got to go defense. Pair Chubb with Myles Garrett, you got a defense. Deadly. You got a pass rush for the next decade. Especially under team control, too. You're not paying these guys $20 million. So I think getting these two guys, especially in a division where you have Big Ben, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton, need to get after them. And I think that would be a huge boost for the Browns' defense. Number five, we're on the same page here, Ryan, but different quarterback. I got Josh Rosen going to number five. I think him and John Elway are the same type of person. I think Josh Rosen is going to go in there. Might have to sit. You know, Case Keenum's there. Obviously, they're paying him a lot of money, so you want to see him play. But I think he'll definitely take over in year two, and the Broncos will just continue on their winning tradition. You know, surround him with – they have Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders. They just cut C.J. Anderson, but they'll draft somebody. And I think their defense will help him out, and Josh Rosen will have a very good NFL career in Denver. Number six.
Talk to me.
Quinn Nelson. You got to protect Andrew Luck, because at this point, Andrew Luck's just been getting beat up. And I think the best thing that you can do is protect your franchise. Because if you're just letting, you know, Andrew Luck has had no protection. You know that, Ryan.
I know better than anyone.
You can't win. The Colts can't win games if he's on the bench. So get Quinn Nelson. He'll take out two defenders. I mean, he's one of the best offensive line prospects I've seen in a long time. So he'll definitely help the Colts. Number seven, this is a big surprise here. You guys have been talking about defense. I got them taking Saquon Barkley.
Really? Okay.
They have Jameis Winston, but who's he hand the ball off to? Doug Martin? Nobody. The muscle hamster who's not there anymore?
Yeah, he's not there anymore.
So teams are just double-teaming Mike Evans. Deshaun Jackson's basically not doing nothing. So if you have Saquon Barkley, now teams got to watch out for him. I know their O-line's pretty bad, but they can upgrade that in the draft. Very deep offensive line class. And I think that the defensive back class is very deep too. Safety corner, you can get a quality corner or safety in the second round. So I think they're not going to pass up a talent like Saquon Barkley. I think he'll definitely help Tampa Bay, help them win some games, and take the pressure off of Jameis Winston, who has been considered a bust, sort of, as of right now.
He's got to prove something next year.
Underachieve for sure. I'll go with that. Number eight, I got the Bears taking Tremaine Edmonds. I think this is a perfect pair. A young player who's going to Chicago, and Chicago has Leonard Floyd, another young player who's coming in like Tremaine Edmonds, also a young, very same age. And I think this will be a great great pairing for them because Trey Mann will take over. You know, Brian Urlacher was in Chicago.
Hey.
I think it'd be perfect.
If he turns out to be, way too early to say this, but if he is the next Brian Urlacher, where better to be than Chicago?
I think Chicago's defense is a linebacker away from, you know, being one of being an above average defense because they have.
They got to get back to the Chicago Bears ways of playing.
And Chicago's defense
first.
Was built on linebacker play.
Exactly.
Number nine. Ryan, I got Roquan Smith.
Yep.
I had Roquan. I was gonna put Roquan Smith to Oakland, but I think with the way Reuben Foster's been going, I think they have to take a linebacker at this point. If Reuben Foster was okay, I think they would draft somebody else.
Yeah,
but,
I agree.
But Roquan Smith is basically another version of Reuben Foster, different school, same type of player. I mean, I watched him in the college football playoff. He was a stud. He was making plays all over the field, one man wrecking crew. So I think this will be good for San Francisco. And number 10, I got Oakland taking Denzel Ward. I think Melvin is a good corner, but to bring in another young stud that can pair with Garian Conley from last year, another Ohio State guy, I think that'll be very good, especially with the receivers that are in that division. And you know, we talk about Gruden Grinder, Denzel Ward loves to hit, and John Gruden loves corners, you know, who can hit, cover, and you know, blank take away a side of the field. So that's my top 10.
All right, so Stone, you obviously noticed that there's one guy missing in my top 10. Your number one guy, Josh Allen. Let's talk about guys that we think. Teams that can trade up and who they'd go get.
Number one, Buffalo, hands down. I think they're going
to
trade up.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
They got too many picks
to
deal with yet.
Buffalo is going to go for that number seven pick for the Tampa Bay Bucks, and they're going to draft Josh Allen. I think Josh Allen is going to Buffalo.
He looks like, you know, I project him to go to Cleveland, but he looks like a Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He looks like it. He has that mentality.
Yeah. He'd be a great fit in Buffalo.
Exactly. Another team to watch out for, Arizona. Because I think if Arizona,
they need a quarterback
if
too.
Lamar Jackson starts to drop, you know, if Miami doesn't take him, I think Arizona could jump up a few spots and just make sure that they have their quarterback. Because are we really going to trust Sam Bradford for 16 games?
Nope.
Is he even going to play? Mike Glennon, you saw how that worked out last year.
Oh, awful.
So I think Arizona needs a quarterback, especially to pair him and David Johnson in the backfield. Good luck. And one more team to watch out for, Zach, your Pats.
Ayo.
I don't know if they'll draft a quarterback, but I think they're a team to watch out for.
I think 100% they're going to draft a quarterback in this draft
because
there's no way.
No, I don't know in the first round.
They have to.
Yeah, there's no way Bill Belichick is going into next year without no young guys backing up Tom Brady, and he's thinking about the future already. There's rumors about Tom Brady retiring this year already. I don't believe those. I'm sure he's going to come back. There's so much stuff that's been leaking out of New England, and I think most of it is just smoke, like you say, Stone. Yeah. But I think that the Patriots will get a quarterback, Kyle Uletta.
That's what I've been saying. I said that a few shows ago. That's what I think. Bill Belichick loves his FCS quarterbacks.
Yep. And when I hear talk about Lamar Jackson,
I'm going to disagree.
What the amount of picks or players or whatever they would have to trade up to go get Lamar
Jackson.
It's
not Bill's MO to do that.
Exactly. And it's not Lamar Jackson isn't a good enough fit for New England for them to sacrifice so many picks to move up that much. So I don't think Lamar Jackson
I agree with you with the fact that I don't think they're trading up for a quarterback. I don't think nobody can identify talent better than Bill Belichick, and he will get a talented quarterback in a second or third round. But I don't think it's going to be Kyle Uletta. I have them going Mason Rudolph.
That's what I was going to say.
Mason Rudolph. I like the kid.
He's good. He's a good prospect. I just don't. Big 12 quarterbacks just haven't really panned out in the NFL.
That's fair. But if you give that kid 2 years behind Tom Brady and you give him Bill Belichick, then I'm kind of scared to see what he could turn out to be.
Very good.
I think, if there's one team that I think is going to trade up, and we mentioned them earlier, I think it's going to be Buffalo, but I don't see them trading to seven because I think there's a lot of teams who are going to try to trade up to six. And I think Buffalo's going to feel the pressure. There's already talks that Miami's been in talks with the Colts to try to trade from 11 to 6. So I think there's going to be a bidding war for that 6th overall pick. And if there happens like that Bradley Chubb, like you said, is off the board, maybe Quentin Nelson is also off the board, and maybe Saquon too in the top 5, it's a possibility, then I think that the Colts definitely trade back and break the bank and get a bunch of picks.
One more team to watch out for. I think this could be a very surprise team that makes a move like Chicago did last year on draft day when no one expected Chicago to trade up one spot.
Horrible move, by the way.
Yeah. That, besides the point, New Orleans. I think with the way Drew Brees' contract is set up right now, they need to get somebody. And if they see that, you know, a quarterback's dropping, you know, maybe Baker doesn't go to 3 and he drops a little bit down, Lamar Jackson drops into the 20s, they're at 27. They have enough picks to move up and maybe grab that quarterback in the future. Because I don't think Drew Brees is going to be around that much longer. And you got no backup. Like, does anybody here know who New Orleans' backup is?
Can tell you.
Yeah, so I think they're going to draft somebody. It might not be in the first round, but I'm saying that's a prize team to watch for if the board starts to fall their way.
I'd love to see that.
All right, so we got to wrap up this segment, but I just got to mention this. If you guys have one too, feel free to bring it up. If I got to say one guy who I think has the biggest bust potential, it is your number one guy. I think that Josh Allen could 100% be a Jamarcus Russell.
He's a boomer bust. That's what it is, a boomer bust.
Yeah, so for me, if there's one big bust in this year's draft, it's going to be Josh Allen.
For me, it's Josh Rosen. I don't like Josh Rosen at all. I don't like that he wasn't winning at UCLA. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his character. I don't like Josh Rosen. Let's just put it that way.
And I'll go with Sam Darnold. Just because of the fact he's from USC. And I don't know how many USC quarterbacks are good. I hate quarterbacks that come from big schools because they know they have talent around them. They're not good. That's usually how it works. But also, we'll not pick on the quarterback position. It's going to be the receiver position that has a few busts. Because first-round receivers recently have been terrible. Other than Amari Cooper, Kevin White's been garbage. Obviously, he's been hurt, garbage. Breshad Perriman, garbage. I think there's other few receivers. Because you've seen teams in the past. Antonio Brown, sixth round, MVP candidate. Like, I don't know how many other receivers have gone in the first round that have been very good. So I think you can grab a receiver in the later rounds. And I think a team that drafts a receiver in the first round might regret it.
All right. Next, folks, buckle up, turn up that dial. We are talking about LeBron James against Michael Jordan. Next on the huddle.
This is 88.9 CJMQ FM, Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
All right, we are back. We are with Nate Walker and Ryan David. Let's talk LeBron James against Michael Jordan. I've been waiting for this segment all week. I can't wait. So, Nate, you're defending Michael Jordan, who is, let's say, a majority of people say he's the GOAT.
No, yeah, for sure. Michael Jordan, what more can I say? You know, he's the reason why the number 23 is so iconic today. Let's be honest. You know, guys nowadays, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, you know, like Michael Jordan was a revolutionary player. And let's not forget, man, like he's done so much for not only just basketball, but the culture itself. Not too many people were really paying attention to basketball until Michael Jordan burst through the scenes. Now, all of a sudden, all we hear is Jumpman and, you know, Jordan shoes. Like this is someone who's not only a icon in the basketball community, but in the world community. You know, this is a guy that, in my opinion, is obviously the best basketball player of all time. And this is a guy that has his jersey retired in two different stadiums, one of them in which he never even played for the team in the Miami Heat. So, I don't know. You tell me. Yeah, you tell me. Have you ever seen a Miami player wear the number 23? Not at all. You tell me who's the greatest.
LeBron James, since you're asking. Because LeBron James is the greatest basketball player to ever play the game. Like, it's so hard to argue with people about LeBron versus Jordan because people don't want to let go of the past. And Nate, we've been through this before. You're an old soul and you won't let go of the past either. Like, I don't know what it is, but LeBron James, if you look at what a player has done throughout a career, LeBron James just got better year after year. And he's in year 15, and he's probably arguably having the best season of his career. When people argue LeBron versus Jordan or Jordan versus LeBron, the only argument they have is, well, Jordan went 6-for-6, and that's great.
Absolutely.
But when you ask me, again, that's a team thing. It takes a team. That's competition you play against. And then if you look at I'm just talking basketball right now. What does Michael Jordan really do better than LeBron James? Free throw shooting. That's what he has over LeBron James. He doesn't rebound better. He wasn't the better shooter. He wasn't the better passer. I mean, LeBron just has it all.
Okay, Ryan, you just asked, what does LeBron do? What does MJ do that is better than LeBron?
Free throw shooting.
Let's not forget steals. Let's not act like LeBron James. Granted, LeBron James is having probably one of the better years of his career on the offensive side of the ball. Let's not forget that basketball is a game that requires both offense and defense. And this is something that you and I have spoken about offset multiple times. And I tell you time and time again, LeBron James is excelling as an offensive player, but decreasing as a defensive player.
And that's fine.
That's something that is crucial to the game of basketball. Michael Jordan is a player that played both sides of the floor, game in and game out. We talked about it last show that Russell Westbrook is a player that we admire for his hustle and his ethic. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to act like Michael Jordan didn't put in the same amount of effort, if not more, into the game of basketball. He left the game and brought back exactly like he never even left. This is a guy that revolutionized the game and someone that it's worthy of being nostalgic over because his legacy has not died yet. LeBron James, don't get me wrong, I believe he is a tremendous talent, easily the best player in the world today. But as of right now, he is not better than Michael Jordan.
When you were arguing the defense for LeBron, you were mentioning this season he's better offensively than defensively. He's decreasing defense. We're arguing career right now. And when you look at careers, LeBron averages more rebounds, assists, blocks, steals, shoots a better percentage from two, a better percentage from three than Jordan. The only thing Jordan beats LeBron in average-wise over his career is points, and that's only three more points on three more shot attempts. So if we're arguing, oh, Michael had more steals, well, LeBron averaged more blocks and steals, so don't come talk to me about defense.
Okay, so you're talking about steals, but I'm seeing here that Michael Jordan actually led the NBA in steals three times in his career. Not only that, but he also won Defensive Player of the Year in 1988 and was first team all defense nine times. How many times did LeBron win Defensive Player of the Year? How many times did LeBron go all NBA defense?
Six times.
But they played the same amount. But they played the exact same amount of years, right? So what I'm telling you is that Michael Jordan was a more stable on the defensive end of the ball than LeBron James ever has.
You know what helps to really give you that energy for defense? Retiring twice, taking years off to maybe rest a little bit.
See, and that's where you're wrong. Because what a lot of people don't want to take into consideration is that that when Michael Jordan retired, he didn't retire to go sit on his couch. He didn't retire to go do – he was still active. Michael Jordan was still playing a game that requires more games a season than basketball.
We're not going to act like – a lot less physical activity. You're not going to sit here and tell me like you're running around that much in baseball. No, Michael was booty at baseball. That was a poor excuse for an athlete. What do you think you are, Bo Jackson? You can't do that. Come on, Michael.
Come on. Let's not act like taking a certain off of a year or off of a certain activity and then readjusting isn't going to take time. Michael Jordan came back from baseball. Yes, did it take him some time to readjust? Absolutely. But then he came back and what? Three-peated? So what's your excuse then?
Man, you want to talk about – okay, let's talk about championships then. First of all, LeBron came into the league and dominated instantly. As an 18-year-old, let's get that straight. Michael Jordan was coached by a great coach at North Carolina. So let's get that straight. Let's just focus on that for a second. And now you look, MJ was drafted in 84. Okay, that means he got eliminated in 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, 89, and 90 before he even made it to his first NBA Finals.
Absolutely. We're not going to act like he wasn't playing against some of the most elite teams in NBA history. Oh, my God. The Detroit Pistons, the Boston Celtics. First of all. Are you kidding me? These are teams that are absolutely iconic in the game of basketball, so while LeBron James is playing against the East, who has nothing but a whole bunch of kindergartners playing.
Okay, so let's talk teams then. Let's talk teams, all right? Michael Jordan, in his six final appearances, not one of those teams was better than the worst team that LeBron ever played. And I'll name you off those teams. I'll name you those teams.
I beg your pardon?
I will name you. Hear me out here. Michael never played a team that had more than two Hall of Famers. And those two Hall of Famers, one he played them, were old. So let's get to this. He played the Lakers, all right? Which was Magic's last year, the year he had AIDS. Let's get that straight. So he was health-wise, he wasn't doing good. In his last season, and James Worthy and Byron Scott, both didn't play that series because of injuries. So that's a pretty weak team that you're playing against. Then you look at Portland. All they had was one Hall of Famer in Clyde Drexler. The rest of that team was a bunch of scrubs. Weak. The next series they played, Phoenix. All they had was Charles Barkley and a bunch of scrubs. That's, again, one Hall of Famer. After that, MJ left, right? His last season with the Bulls before he retired the first time, they had 58 wins. Left to play baseball the year after, his team had 56 wins. So you're telling me Michael makes a two-game difference. So how good was Michael's roster, really?
Where'd that team go without Michael Jordan?
They didn't win. You're right. Okay. Fine. But a two-game difference? When you look at what LeBron did, he took the Cavs to the finals in his first year with probably one of the worst rosters ever.
Yeah, let me just jump in. I was watching a highlight from that first game, and when they introduced the players, who are those guys?
And can I name them for you right now? Because I have a list right here. You tell me how many of these players you guys know. Shannon Brown, Daniel Gibson, Larry Hughes, Eric Snow, Dwayne Jones, Drew Gooden, Zydrunas Ilgauskas, Demetrius Nichols, Alexander Pavlovich, Anderson Varejao, and Scott Pollard. That was the whole team. That's the whole roster. I didn't leave nobody out. LeBron James carried a bunch of nobodies. Left for Miami, took Miami to the finals, and the Cleveland Cavaliers became the worst team in the league. Went back to Cleveland. Miami missed the playoffs the year LeBron left, and the Cavs have been to three straight finals since. So don't get me started. So now, Michael, like I said, two-game difference when he retired. When he comes back, he plays the Supersonics. All they had, again, one Hall of Famer and Gary Payton. Everybody else on that team was weak. And then in his last two, he played Utah, the only team that had two Hall of Famers. I'll give him that. But they were a 34 and 35-year-old Stockton and Malone. Old dudes retiring in a couple years. They were done. Now let's look at the competition LeBron James has had to play. Albeit he went 3-5 in the finals, fine. But let's look at the teams he's played. In 07, they lost to the Spurs. That's Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, Robert Horry, coached by arguably the greatest coach of all time in Popovich, or at least top two. In 2011, they lost to the Mavericks. Dirk, Vince Carter, Stojakovic, who was arguably one of the best shooters in the league at the time, Jason Terry, Lamar Odom, Barea, Sean Marion, and Tyson Chandler. Solid roster. 2012, when he got his first win, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Reggie Jackson, Serge Ibaka, and Kevin Martin.
Guys who all had to take time to develop and able to be the players that they are now. Let's not.
They weren't the players they were now, 100%. But we're not going to.
Let's not throw out names and not put out the facts.
But we're not going to act like.
All I'm saying is if you're going to put out the facts on John Stockton and Mailman Malone and saying how they were old and depleted, we might as well talk about these guys too in the exact same light.
That's fair. That's fair.
Continue.
That's fair. But that team right there, off talent alone, was still better than anybody MJ played. The year after, he played the Spurs. They won. Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, they added T-Mac, Kawhi, and Danny Green. That's an unbelievable team. The year after, they lost to that same team with the Spurs. Fine. The Spurs got their revenge. 2015, the Golden State Warriors the first time. LeBron James, on his own, took them to six. Because let's not forget, Kyrie got hurt, didn't play the series. Kevin Love got hurt, didn't play the series. So they're playing against Steph, Draymond, and Klay. And needless to say, LeBron led both teams in scoring, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks in the series. That's impeccable. Jordan ain't never done that.
Congratulations.
Jordan has never done that.
Congratulations, LeBron James.
In 2016, LeBron comes right back. He finally has his team healthy. Playing against the greatest team to ever play. Statistically, they beat Jordan's 72-win team. They had 73 wins that year. Greatest comeback in NBA history. Down 3-1. LeBron James, best player in that series, brought them back 3-1. And in 2017, his most recent one, he lost because that 73-win team had to add the second greatest player in the league in Kevin Durant. So it took let's call it maybe four potential Hall of Famers to take down LeBron James because they blew a 3-1 series to him. So you're not going to sit there and tell me that Jordan played better competition in the finals than LeBron did, because that's just false.
That was really great,
guys. That is false.
That was really great. I applaud you for that. But let me tell you something about LeBron James. LeBron James, unlike Michael Jordan, never had to defeat three teams with either a 50-win or two teams with 60 wins on a playoff run. Michael Jordan has. So how are you telling me about Michael Jordan not playing against good competition? From what I hear there, that's nothing but good competition.
In the finals.
I'm talking playoff
run. Let's talk
run.
Finals.
I'm talking playoff run. Let's talk about finals. Let's talk about how LeBron James, in all essence, everyone wanted to compare him to Michael Jordan. He's the next Michael Jordan. He's about to surpass Michael Jordan. He was about to get a three-peat like Michael Jordan, if I wasn't wrong. Unless it was Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks who beat him when he went ice cold. We're talking about probably one of the worst playoff performances ever seen. That was disgusting. And you're going to tell me that Michael Jordan didn't ball out? Not only that, but Michael Jordan arguably has probably the most 30, 40, and 50-point games in playoffs. In playoffs. So you're telling me when it's time to shine, one guy's not showing up, but the other guy's showing up.
But who leads the NBA in playoff scoring? But who has the most points in NBA history in the playoff?
I believe his name is
LeBron James.
Who has to get someone to close for him? Because Michael Jordan never had to have anybody close for him. Zach, let me ask you something. When it comes to sports, and there's a certain event that happens within the sport titled the blank, there's value to that. We're talking about Montana to Clark, the catch. We're talking about Elway, the drive. Last time I checked, Michael Jordan had the shot, right?
And LeBron James
had the decision.
The block
that led to Kyrie's closing.
The block. Let's speak about blocks, and let's talk about how LeBron James in playoffs almost averages about the same number as one Michael Jordan in averaging blocks. So let's not talk about the block when, realistically speaking, all LeBron James did was play the role he was expected to play, but never surpassed what he wanted, what everyone else was expecting of him. Michael Jordan, time and time again, showed people over and over and continued to move the bar higher. It's easy to say that LeBron James is doing great when he's catching up to someone that already did things of this level beforehand. Now, let's talk about...
First of all, he's not catching up. He's surpassing. Let's just get that straight.
He's catching up.
Let's get that
straight. He's definitely catching up.
Because if I can read you the stats, he's surpassing.
Stats are one thing. But let me tell you about what LeBron James is doing in terms of his era in competition and what Michael Jordan did. Last time I checked, as I told you, Michael Jordan got 9 all-defense teams in the NBA. 10 all-NBA first teams. Michael Jordan is the only person in NBA history.
LeBron has 11 All-NBA first team. I just wanted to mention that.
All right, congrats. Michael Jordan was the only player is the only player in NBA history to win both regular season MVP and defensive MVP.
That's fine. Go ahead.
Not only, but I reiterate the fact that he's led the NBA in steals three years of his career.
That's nice, but LeBron averages more steals over his career, so let's just get that straight.
Okay, and tell me how many MVPs LeBron has.
Five? Is it five?
No. LeBron James has 4 MVPs.
4 MVPs, you're right.
And this is, again, the same... These as of right now, they've played about the exact same amount of years. So you're telling me, obviously, and this is why I say LeBron James, is he on pace to pass Michael Jordan? Absolutely. He hasn't done that yet.
He's passed Michael Jordan in statistical category other than points, which he's only 1,000 behind. Let me explain to you why people don't... Zach, hear me out here. People can't say LeBron is better than Jordan because they look at the game solely on scoring, if you will. People like to compare Kobe to Michael more than LeBron because LeBron's more of a Magic Johnson-type player. So they won't give him the credit for greatest of all time because he plays the game differently. If you look at the stats, LeBron is the only player ever, first of all, with 30,000-plus points, 8,000-plus assists, and 8,000-plus rebounds. Let's get that straight. He's the youngest ever, for the record, to score 30,000 points. And when you look at the numbers, Jordan has 32,292 points. LeBron has 31,000, and he's got at least 3 to 5 years left to play at a high level. At least.
No.
If you look at rebounds, Jordan has 6,672. Well, LeBron has 8,410. If you look at assists, Jordan has 5,633. Well, LeBron has 8,206. LeBron is playing the game as a whole better than Jordan did. And when you're talking about who's the greatest basketball player, we're looking at the game as a whole, not just, oh, well, who was more, had that clutch gene and would take the last shot. Why are we criticizing LeBron for
Because that's the most important part of the game. Are you kidding me? Why are we going to ask the greatest player of all time why he can't show up in the best moment of the game?
Because
he absolutely sucks at it. If you're going to be the best, be the best. If you're going to be the best until, then be the best until. But if you're going to talk as the game as a whole, we're talking all 4 quarters till the clock strikes 0. So talk about Michael Jordan with some respect on your name.
Okay, so,
because this is a man that not only played all 4 quarters, but he finished the game for his team.
So we're going
to
penalize.
His team didn't rely on him to be the distraction player and pass it to someone else. He was the guy. Everyone in the stadium, everyone watching the game, knew Michael Jordan was going to hit the shot, and he did hit the shot.
So you're telling me we're penalizing LeBron James for consistently making the right play. Instead of forcing a contested shot, why not swing it out to the better shooter on the team for the higher percentage shot? We're criticizing LeBron James for being a smarter player? Are you kidding me right now?
A smarter player.
The right play when somebody's open is to give the shooter the ball and let him shoot it. So you're telling me if you're making the right play instead of forcing up a shot, you'd rather LeBron force up that shot than make the right pass. Is what you're telling me.
No, what I'm expecting LeBron to do is be the best. Be the best.
But why does being the best have to entail taking the last shot when being the best?
Because it's a game that requires all aspects of the game. From the second the ball is tipped,
all aspects the game includes making the right pass. That's part of the game.
Okay, so you're telling me that when Kyrie Irving took over took over in that series and absolutely went and lost his mind.
You know what's funny about when people talk about Kyrie taking over that series? Everybody seems to forget that LeBron James averaged a triple-double in that series. There's no Kyrie taking that game-winning shot without LeBron James doing what he does. There's no coming back from 3-1 when LeBron James isn't on that team because
I'm
I'm talking about LeBron James' last
NBA Finals win.
That's the same series I'm talking about. He averaged a triple-double in that series. The series they came back 3-1. You take LeBron off that team and they don't make it to the finals. Hell, they don't make the playoffs.
Okay, so you're saying to me that Michael Jordan isn't better than LeBron James because LeBron James plays a more all-around game. But what I'm telling you is that Michael Jordan played more of an all-around game than LeBron James did, only for the sole fact that not only did he get it done on the offensive side of the ball, but he also did it on defense. What I'm trying to tell you is that when Michael Jordan left to play baseball and his team was unsuccessful on going on to probably possibly winning a fourth championship, that when Michael Jordan came back from retirement and they went on another three-peat run, something that, again, I keep reiterating, hasn't been done. No one has won six championships 3-3 because that shows absolute consistency. And you can blame it on the coaching. You can blame it on the team that he had around him. But what I can say to you is the same thing, that LeBron James essentially constructs the team how he wants the team constructed. He takes everything that he wants and still has no excuse on not winning. So what I'm saying to you is when I'm looking at a LeBron James and I'm seeing the greatness that he's doing on and off the court, but I'm also looking at the fact that he has complete control of his team. Michael Jordan, yes, had Phil Jackson, but we've also seen Phil Jackson make some of the stupidest mistakes
in NBA history. I'm very upset that you just put Phil Jackson like that was nothing. Yes, he did have Phil Jackson, but no, he had Phil Jackson.
Absolutely.
He had Phil Jackson. He had Dean Smith.
But LeBron has everything.
He had Dean Smith in North Carolina.
But LeBron has the every say-so of his organization. So what I'm saying to you is if LeBron James can construct any team that he wants and constructs it properly to his liking and still can't win, there's no excuse on why you should say this man is the best.
And that's a bogus argument.
How's that a bogus argument?
Because as much as LeBron has control over what he wants, he can't play for these guys. If they're not hitting the shots, he can't control that. It's a streaky game. It takes teams to win. It takes coaching to win.
Absolutely.
And when you play a team like the Golden State Warriors, Michael's not beating that team. Michael would not beat that team. I'm sorry to tell you.
I'm sorry.
And everybody knows it. Michael would not beat that team. And you talked about Phil Jackson like that was nothing. Michael Jordan had a Hall of Fame coach him in the NCAA for 3 years.
And you're acting like...
He came to the NBA and had a Hall of Fame coach him his career. Who's LeBron's best coach?
Eric Spoelstra. And you're not going to talk about Eric Spoelstra like he wasn't no scrub. You're not going to talk...
He's no Phil Jackson.
You're not going to talk about
LeBron
James.
He's no Phil Jackson.
You're not going to talk about LeBron James playing with the Miami Heat like he wasn't playing against arguably the top three... Probably the third best guard in NBA history in Dwayne Wade. Despite anything that you may say, this is a guy that absolutely has complete dominance of everything he ever wanted and has all the talent in the world, but still can't get it done because he ends up losing in the clutch.
Let's put into perspective how great and how dominant LeBron James really is for a second. And Zach, I feel like you might enjoy this little statistic here.
Let me hear it.
Michael Jordan has never averaged more than 8 assists, 8 rebounds, or shot above 54% from the floor over a full season in his 15-season career.
Hard to do that when you're playing on both sides of the floor.
LeBron James, in his 15th year at 33 years old, is averaging 9.2 assists, 8.7 rebounds, and shooting over 54%. So in his 15th season alone, he's doing something that Michael has never done in his career. So when you're talking to me about who the greatest of all time is, literally the only argument people bring up and can bring up is 6-for-6 and, oh, well, he took the last shot. That doesn't define the greatest basketball player to ever play the game. There's more to it than winning championships and shooting the last shot and being that guy. LeBron plays the game better than Jordan. All around, he does everything better than Michael did. How does that not make you the greatest player to ever play the game?
Bro, what I'm telling you right now is that LeBron James, as great as he's playing and averaging all these numbers, again, all you keep mentioning is offensive side of the ball. Offense is one part of the game.
Bro, he averages more blocks, more steals than Jordan over their careers. That's defense. With six you're not going to act like, okay, Michael had nine, fine, but you're not going to act like six first-team all defenses is nothing over a 15-year span.
Bro, what do you mean, act like it's nothing? What's a bigger number, nine or six? What's a bigger number, nine or six?
Nine, but what's a bigger number? 8,000 rebounds, 8,000 or six assists, or 5,000 and 6,000?
I never.
What's a bigger average? What's a bigger number that LeBron averages more rebounds, assists, blocks, steals, shoots a better percentage? All those numbers are bigger than Jordan's numbers. So don't talk to me about whose numbers are bigger.
Absolutely. And when I'm talking, if we're gonna talk about bigger, then I keep saying, why not bring up the biggest moments in the game? Why not bring up the fact that Michael Jordan played a game absolutely sick with the flu and still wants to come back and still bring his team to win a championship? Why are we not gonna talk about the fact that Michael Jordan not only did everything that he did over his entire career with the Chicago Bulls, but still came back and played 82 games as a 40-year-old man, and we're going to act like he wasn't playing against an era where touching someone isn't a foul. We're going to act like Michael Jordan didn't play in an absolutely meat, grind, and potato. Like, he was the meat and potatoes of his team in a league where everything else wasn't accept, like, where everything was acceptable. You were allowed to body a guy, and that's why people like Dennis Rodman were so we're such big staples in the era of the 90s, was because they were able to actually body you and kill you in when you're going to the basket, where someone like LeBron James gets sneezed on into the paint and it's a technical. Are you guys kidding me?
Okay.
Michael Jordan played in a tougher era in basketball.
Okay, so
not only that, but he was the best in that era. And not only that, but he did it on both ends of the floor.
Okay, so let's talk about eras for a second. 100% Michael played in a more physical era. There's no doubt in my mind. But Michael is not facing the same kind of that LeBron faces. Like, as years go on, athletes get better. They get more athletic. They get more versatile. It's facts that LeBron is playing against better athletes. And let's talk about defending for a second. Because you want to talk about MJ's the better defender. You know what? Fine. Maybe he has a little bit of an edge over him in defending. But who's the more versatile defender? Because if you ask LeBron James to go out there and guard the point guard, he could do it. You go ask him to guard that shooting guard, he could do it.
Absolutely.
You ask him to guard the three, the four, the center, he could do it.
Okay.
Michael can't do that.
No, for sure.
Michael could not do that. So
for sure.
If we're looking at defensive things, they're both very, very, very good defenders in different aspects. So don't come to me like LeBron's not a good defender.
Who's the more effortful defender? Who's the one that actually puts the effort into defending? Again, people want to always talk about LeBron James. He's doing so well. He's being so nice. You know, his body is so well maintained. It's hard for you to damage your body when you're not putting your body out there to get damaged. Again,
That's a ridiculous statement.
That's ridiculous.
You're really acting like LeBron goes out there and doesn't try. That is blasphemy.
I never said that he never tries, but what I'm saying to you is the only reason why he played 82 games this season is because he got criticized for not doing so.
The only reason he played 82 this season.
That's never been an issue with any other player in the league.
Let's clarify that for a second. He played 82 this season because he had to.
No,
because he had a whole different team come out. He did it after the trade deadline, and he needed to help with the chemistry and help get guys acclimated to the new team.
No, I haven't jumped in really, but let me just add that LeBron is going for his eighth straight final.
Absolutely.
Like, Jordan had to retire after three, and Golden State right now is crumbling with injuries because they're going to their fourth potentially in a row. So that's one thing you got to give LeBron James: durability and the fact that he pulled off 82 games going into his after seven straight finals. You can't discredit him for
absolutely,
that. That's for
but
sure.
Then I ask you this question: whoever cares about the first loser in any sporting event? No one. Because it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you still lost. You're not the best. You're not the best of that year. You didn't win. So at the end of the day, you can go to as many finals as you want, but there's a certain accolade of actually winning a title that holds a certain regimen over everybody else's head.
So you're one of those who believes LeBron should lose before the finals so he doesn't affect his record.
No,
because it's a lot better that Michael lost
absolutely a bunch
in the first round.
Absolutely
as
not.
Opposed
I'm not
to
saying,
making it to the finals.
I'm not saying at all that LeBron James should lose before getting to the finals. That would be absolutely ridiculous.
Well, because that's why Michael's 6-6, right? Because
I'm,
he lost in the first round.
But what I'm saying to you.
Because he couldn't get there more than six times.
What I'm saying to you is that there's a certain regimen in between being the best. How many times can you be the best? You said it yourself in the last week's argument that when we're talking about quarterbacks, it's not like basketball. Basketball's a more individualized game.
Which it is.
If it's a more individualized game, then winning that title and being the best means that you were the best of that season. You had more of a hand to play. So what I'm saying to you is, in a sport like basketball, if you're going to have the same arguments that, oh, we shouldn't count this in a sport like football because there's too many guys, if there's not enough guys in basketball, that means that each player has more of a hand to play, which means Michael Jordan actually had more of a hand to play in his championships than LeBron's three, because he has six. There's a difference in that.
And I don't disagree with that. I'm sticking to that. It's definitely the one player can affect basketball a lot more than a quarterback can in football. And we've seen that with LeBron James. Because every team he's been to, he takes to the finals. Every team he leaves is bottom of the league. So we've seen that. But again, it still takes the team to win. Because when you have to assemble... when you have to get the second greatest player in the league and add them to a 73-win team just to beat LeBron James, you're the greatest. And we're not talking about who had the greatest teams, because that's what it takes to win the championship. Sure, LeBron wasn't part of the greatest teams, but that doesn't make him not the greatest player. LeBron has been the greatest. He's been in the league for 15 years, and I think it's fair to say he's been the best player in the league for at least 12 of them.
Okay, and what I'm trying to say to you is, we're not talking about teams, but you're saying that people need to take certain people need to make certain things possible in order for LeBron to make it through his threshold. And what I'm saying to you is that instead of Michael Jordan having to wait for people to do certain things to get to his threshold, he had to wait for his threshold. What I'm saying to you is that you cannot sit there and talk about the Detroit Bad Boy Pistons and the Boston Celtics and the Showtime Lakers, despite no matter where you place Magic Johnson or those guys. What I'm saying to you is that these teams are absolutely legendary and have stabled themselves in the NBA community already. They're already in the record books. They're already champions. What I'm saying to you is that if there's two championship caliber teams that are facing you in your conference going when you're on your road for a playoff run, opposed to LeBron James, where all the championship caliber teams are on the other conference, of course you're gonna make it to the finals, but you still can't beat them because you're not the best player. You're not the best team, and that's where the best player is called on the point the most, and LeBron James hasn't shown he can come clutch in those moments. Therefore, I don't think LeBron James is the best player ever.
First of all, LeBron James has shown he can come clutch in those moments. We've seen it time and time again. Let's not act like he hasn't done it. Secondly, LeBron James has nothing left to prove. By the end of his career, he will be ahead of Jordan in every statistical category, which basically all he has left to do is pass him in points. The only argument will remain that he didn't go 6-for-6 and he's 3-5 in the finals. And mark my words, LeBron James will win more championships. So when you're looking at who's the greatest basketball player of all time, you got to look at the way LeBron affects his teams. And that, I think that alone is the greatest argument you can have. When you see the effect he had on Cleveland when he left and the effect he had on Miami when he joined them and vice versa, compared to Michael leaving and his team still being a 56-win team.
That didn't go anywhere in the postseason. They didn't win when it mattered because they didn't have the player that could produce when it mattered.
If you're telling me the greatest player of all time can only account for a 2-game difference, that just doesn't make sense to me. Because when you take the
regular
greatest
season, though, why are we only confining this to a regular season argument? Of course, if it's a regular season argument, then that's a totally different spectrum. What I'm trying to say to you, though, is that when it comes to when it actually matters in the postseason, LeBron James gets saved almost just as many times as Tom Brady does.
Okay, you want to talk about save? We're not going to talk about all those times Steve Kerr has hit the clutch shots for Michael and all those guys have hit clutch shots for Michael, because it wasn't always Michael. So let me just wrap up here, because Zach, we're running out of time. LeBron James is the greatest player to ever play. A lot of people can't let go of the past, and you need to start. Let's look ahead to what we're witnessing right now and appreciate greatness, because we are witnessing the greatest basketball player to ever play the game.
To ever soon play the game.
All right, folks, we got to wrap this show up. And it saddens me to say, but it was our last show with Ryan, Stone, Nate. I'm sure you'll be back on the air with us next year. And Ryan and Stone, I know I'm going to call you guys up whenever something happens in the playoffs or whatever. Because in a couple weeks, I'll be back on the air with Dylan. But, folks, this was the last episode, our 20th. We've been 5 months strong. And last thing I have to say is thank you to David and Maureen for giving us this opportunity. Thanks to all you guys, Ryan, Stone, Nate, for doing this show as great as it was, making my job easier. And, folks, this was The Huddle.